At the conclusion of Shacharis, in just about every Siddur, we find the 13 principles of faith, the Yud Gimel Ikarim, printed. Animam, that's how we usually refer to it. And amongst all of 13, number 12 is probably the most prominent and well known. Animamin, Bevias HaMashiach, Afal Pishias Mameya, Im Kolze Achakalu B'choyim Shiaba. I believe with complete faith that Mashiach is coming, even though it may take a long time. Nevertheless, I will wait until that time comes. And every day, it could be any day, that he will come. And what's unusual about this particular one of the 13 Animamin statements is that all the others are very simple and very clear. Animamin, I believe, for example, number 6, Shekol Divrei Neviim Emes, that all the words of the prophets are true. And then we move on to number 7 and 8 and 9 and so forth. What's unique about number 12 is that it's not simply a statement of faith, but it's almost like there's a dialogue, a back and forth. I believe, yes, that Mashiach is going to come, but there is something which might lead me to a different conclusion. And nevertheless, I'm going to stick to the appropriate faith and believe that he'll come, and he can come any day. It's almost like there's a conversation going on over here. When we look at other examples where we could have made such statements, they're absent. For example, the Rambam says that we believe that the Torah that we were given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Animamin, I believe, will not be switched with any other body of law or any other religion. Okay, we could have added on, well, even though there's billions of Christians and Arabs in the world, nevertheless, I'm going to stick to my guns. No, we don't say that. For example, to take another example, when it says, Animamin b'emunah shlema, Shabore yizbar shmo eino guf. Hashem has no physical reality. His being is not physical or corporal in any way. Right? We don't say, and even though the Torah occasionally talks about God's hands or ears or performing actions that human beings would have, nevertheless, no, we don't have such a construct. Only when it comes to Animamin, discussing the Geula, the redemption, there's this dialogue, the back and forth, this elaboration, and we have to understand why that should be so. So I believe the answer may begin with an observation that was made by Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein, the Rosh Yeshiva of the Svalbardka Yeshiva that moved to Eretz Yisrael in the earlier part of the 20th century. Unfortunately, they were situated in Hebron, and after the terrible massacre in 1929, they had to leave and they moved to Yerushalayim. And he says, let's try to put ourselves in the shoes of someone who, on August 2nd, 1492, Tisha B'Av, was on one of the last boats out of Spain because of the Great Expulsion due to the Inquisition. What would such a person be thinking? On the one hand, the pain of having to uproot oneself, one's family, leave everything behind, leave a business, a family, a culture, a community, and move to some unknown place. Terrible. Unfortunately, people have had to do that so many times in history, but it's a horror. Number two, a sense of indignation. The Jewish people contributed so much to the wealth, to the economy, to the politics, to the government of Spain in a golden era, and they were just put out on the street and said, you must leave. Obviously, the Inquisition, with greatest cruelty, hunted down anyone who would remain, and there was a further sense of anger at the terrible treatment that Jews were receiving. But deep down in the hearts of those who were expelled, perhaps there was also a feeling that, you know what, this is a tremendous Chil Hashem. But that Kiddush Hashem that will, so to speak, give the Spaniards their just deserts, that will expose the Ribbono Shel Olam's vengeance against this terrible Inquisition, will one day come, maybe not next year, maybe the year after, but this can't persist. This can't go on. Now, if we just consider modern times, it's conceivable to imagine such a thought, because, after all, in the aftermath of the Holocaust, obviously, there's no way that any reparations could possibly justify, God forbid, or even do justice in any shape or form to the atrocities that were committed by the Nazis, and 6 million Jews were killed. But at the same time, we saw the country of Germany, the economy was decimated. The German people were brought to their knees. And Nazi hunting began. shortly after the Holocaust and continues to this day, trying to find every single last person who was involved in the Holocaust. So that happened, and perhaps this was something in the back of the minds of the people leaving Spain at that time. But if you think about it, anything but that was the result. August 3rd, 1492 was the day that Christopher Columbus set sail to the New World. And when he reached America, what he did, essentially, was bring Spain to a new level of wealth, of prominence, colonies and empire, gold and silver and all the treasures of the Americas now belonged to Spain. So Spain, after the expulsion, was on the rise. It wasn't until 1580, the defeat of the Spanish Armada, that things began to take a turn. 1580, that means 90 years after the expulsion. In other words, it's fair to say that probably nobody who left Spain at that time, 1492, was alive or certainly could even remember what happened when 1580 came around. So there was no vengeance. They did not live to see what happened when HaKadosh Baruch Hu finally turned the tables on Spain. Now, on the one hand, that could sound very disturbing. Suffered at the hands of Spain, but did not see what the positive result was somewhere down the line. However, at the same time, if we consider the fact that on the very next day, Tisha B'Av that year, 1492, was a Thursday. Friday, Shabbos Nachamu, was also the beginning of the process that would create for the Jewish people a future place of refuge after World War II, and even before that. If you think about how many millions of Jews came to America, 1880, through Ellis Island alone, 200,000 Jews. 1890 to 1900, 300,000 Jews. In the next 25 years, 1.5 million Jews. Millions and millions of Jews found refuge in America from the pogroms and oppression in Russia. And of course, after the war, America could have definitely done much more for the people at that time. But how many of us, parents or grandparents, they needed a place to go. And if they did not have that, we might not be sitting here today. America was ultimately that safe haven that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, hundreds of years before, set in motion to be created in the aftermath of the expulsion. The lesson over here is, Ani Mamin B'Muna Shleima B'Vias HaMashiach, I believe that there will be geulas, there will be redemptions, a final redemption. However, Apol Pishias Mamea, knowing and feeling strongly that that may take much longer than I can imagine, will not function on my clock, on my time, and my time frame, that's part and parcel of the very same belief, understanding that Hashem has his own timetable. And that goes back to the very first geula. Moshe Rabbeinu, the end of Parshas Shmos, comes back to Hashem and says, God, you sent me to Paro to tell him to free the Jews. And what happened? It only made things worse. It only made things worse. Now the Jews have to work even harder. We didn't get anywhere with this. And Moshe Rabbeinu was told by Hashem, according to the Midrash, you know what, Moshe? Because you don't have that patience, because you think it has to work on your timetable, you will not remain around long enough to see it finally come to fruition. And that episode was one of the reasons why he was not entitled to enter Eretz Yisrael and see the final stage of this process that began in Egypt and extended 40 years through the desert until they finally entered Eretz Yisrael. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's timetable. It works on his clock. Apol Pishi Yismamea, knowing that it may take longer than I'm prepared to wait, that's part and part of the belief that Ani Mamin B'Emuna Shleima B'Vias HaMashiach. We may not see what's going on at this moment, but we believe that Hashem is setting something up that down the line we'll be able to appreciate as ultimately good. Reminds me of something that the Rav used to reflect upon. The Rav in the 1920s, 1930s, was deciding where the future would take him and his family, where he would go, where he would serve as a Rav, where he would have an impact. And like many of the people in that generation, they were afraid to go to America. It was indeed a land of opportunity, but at the same time, it was the trade from the Medina. And they were afraid, how can I bring my family there? How can I successfully raise Torah Jews in a country where the spirituality is totally absent? And he actually tried out for a job to be the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. And believe it or not, he lost. He had a problem in Tel Aviv, and he lost. I don't know who was in charge of that search committee, but he's probably rolling over in his grave right now. But he lost. And he would say, you have no idea how many times I davened and davened and davened to Hashem, please, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't make me go to America. Don't make me stuck there. That's not where I need to be. That's not where I can raise my family. But 50 years later, he was able to look back, hopefully, and appreciate that Hashem had positioned him in a unique situation where he and others like him were able to have a profound impact on America. Not just a profound impact, but they may have saved Orthodox Judaism from the time when many people thought it would sail off into the sunset and totally disappear. But he had no idea at the time, losing that race for the Rabbonus in Tel Aviv, that Hashem had a different plan, but it works on Hashem's timetable. When Hashem is ready to show it to us, Apol Pishi Yismamea, we believe that we're going to see it. Rabbi Fran mentioned this explanation, this observation of Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein, used an illustration from a Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos tells us, and Gemara in Brachos actually, Gemara in Brachos says, playing on the words of Chana in her tefillah, the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, Ein Kadosh Kashem, there's no one like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ein Tzur Kelokeinu, she describes HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a Tzur. There's no one like Hashem. There's no Tzur like our God. Now, Tzur is an interesting term. We use it frequently. Hashem Tzuri V'Goli, to refer to Hashem. We translate it as a rock. Rock is something solid, accountable, and unmoving, strong. I can rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's usually how we understand Tzur. The Gemara gives a different interpretation. Ein Tzur Kelokeinu can be read as Ein Tzayer Kelokeinu. Ein Tzayer Kelokeinu. There's no painter. There's no illustrator. There's no one who draws an image like Hashem. A Tzayer. And the mashal is, if you imagine like a long mural, and you'd stick your nose up to one little spot on that picture, it would just look like graffiti. It would look like a blot of paint of color with no meaning whatsoever. It's only if you take a step back, take many steps back, and you see the entire length of what was drawn to begin to see the beauty of it. That's a mashal for working on Hashem's timetable. And I think we can add that for that reason, it's no coincidence that the name Tzur is always found, I believe, in two specific contexts. Number one, we say, for example, in Hazinu, Hatzur Tamin Paolo, the rock, all of his actions are perfect. All of his actions are perfect. Tzuri V'lo Avlasavo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is my rock, and there's nothing incorrect, nothing wrong about him. And I think what it means is, Tamim, the perfection, is not just saying one point in time, one moment in the grand picture that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is creating, the history that he is painting, but there's a perfection in the big picture. And for that reason, the other context where we use the name Tzur is Hashem Tzuri V'Goali. He is my Redeemer. Because the redemption, the way redemption happens, the way Geula happens, is with that same Nida of Ein Tzayer Kelokeinu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is painting history, and the perfection will be realized, will be appreciated, when we can take that step back. As we see, it's true on the national level, it's true on the personal level, in Rav Soloveitchik's case, but it doesn't have to be someone like Rav Soloveitchik and all the impact that he had. It can be in our lives also, to realize that sometimes things are not okay from the vantage point, from where we see them. And nevertheless, Afal Pishi Yismameh, the time will come on Hashem's clock, on his watch. That's when we will ultimately appreciate the Nechama, moving away from a Tisha B'Av, moving away from a Tisha B'Av 1492, moving away from a Tisha B'Av 2,000 years ago, and moving away from this Tisha B'Av. We can look towards the Geula knowing, believing that the right time is going to happen.